I took some time to look up synonyms for lovesick, and I found the words pining, longing, yearning, and languishing. The word lovesick stuck with me throughout the study of this parable. Some of us have felt a yearning for someone else. For me, I feel it for my husband when he goes away on a trip, and I feel like I'm not whole again until he comes back home. I feel it for my daughter when she goes and visits her dad for the weekend sometimes. And I felt it when I had to leave my baby to go back to work when I returned from maternity leave. Some of us have had someone long for us. We're lucky enough to feel that in our lives. It's always nice knowing that someone cares that much, despite our imperfections. Some people might wish that they have someone pine over them, or maybe they really do, and they just don't know it. The idea of being lovesick. So before we get into the parable, before I read it, I wanted to paint a picture of the setting. I tend to be a real visual person, and I didn't grow up in the church like I know a lot of people here did. So I always like to know the why behind the why and really get the visual and understand why things happen so I can understand the story better. So even though a lot of you may know this already, I'm still going to kind of go over it because I don't want to assume that everybody has that knowledge, and there might be other people here like me. So the story is the third of three stories in this chapter that Jesus told to a mixed audience of people. The people included teachers, Pharisees, sinners, and tax collectors. All of the stories in this chapter are on the topic of lost things that are found. So they have that in common. There's the parable of the lost sheep, the parable of the lost coin, and finally the parable of the lost son that I'll be talking about tonight. So Jesus told these stories in direct response to the Pharisees. They were throwing shade at him every chance they could get, it seemed like, but they seemed to be criticizing him for inviting sinners to come and hang out with him, to chill, have a meal. They didn't seem to think that that was cool. But Jesus clearly knew his audience and knew that the Pharisees saw themselves as righteous and better than everyone else, especially the sinners that were there sitting in the crowd with him. Jesus, it seems to me, had them on a level playing field when he's telling his stories to show them all the ones who were really lost. I like to imagine when Jesus was telling these stories, you know, he'd do a mic drop at the end, or there was an epic rap battle between Jesus and the Pharisees. I thought about Hamilton and how epic that would have been. But the truth is, I realize, is that Jesus was really trying to understand every single heart in the room that was there. And even though I think that he told these stories to get the Pharisees to see the truth, I think that his real message was he wanted them to come to the conclusion that the way to salvation was experiencing God's grace and not just following their religion and their rules and their rigidity of their workspace religion. So, the parable of the prodigal son, what's it all about? I'll tell you about it. There's three main characters of the story, a father and his two sons. The younger son wants to go and live his best life, so he asks his father for half of whatever inheritance that he would be getting. He wanted it early. The dad, what I got from it is that the father knows that the son doesn't want to be there anymore. He wants to go off. He wants to do his own thing. And he knows that, I would imagine, it didn't say this, but as a parent, I think that he really knew that the child wasn't going to have that stability anymore that he had for all those years, the structure and everything. So the father gives the son his inheritance, and the son promptly runs off to another land. He parties. He ends up wasting all of his money and eventually becomes destitute. The older son, he stays, and he works day after day on the father's land. He never leaves. He stays with the dad. The younger son ends up totally broke, and when he's faced with a famine in that land, he takes a job feeding pigs on a farm. He was so starving that at one point he was wishing that he could eat the pig's food, which I think really says a lot because pigs are considered like the dirtiest and most unclean and disgusting animals ever. So I think that really said a lot for where he was. So eventually, the prodigal son, he realizes that he needs to go back home. He feels sorrow for what he's done. He heads back home with his tail between his legs, humbled and hoping that his father will forgive him enough to even just take him back as a servant. He wasn't going to come back and demand that he have everything that he had when he left or he lived that life. He was really hoping he'd just take him back and give him a job and some food. So when he returns back home, the father sees him from a distance. He runs to him, immediately rejoices in the fact that his son has returned home. The dad hugs and kisses his son. He's filled with compassion and joy because he thought he'd never see his son again. There's no guilt trips. There's no I told you so's. The father began to make plans to throw a huge homecoming party, and he called for his servants to dress the son up in his fanciest clothes, bling him out with jewelry and accessories, prepare a feast. The father's so happy that his son was lost and is now found. The son is forgiven and accepted. The father is whole again and remedied of his ailments, a dead relationship brought back to life. And it brings me back to the word lovesick. The older son, he comes out of the field where he's been working. He sees all the commotion and very quickly you realize when you're reading the story that he doesn't feel the same way about this situation as the dad does. He becomes really angry, really annoyed at the fact that he's been faithful to the father, and the father's so quick to rejoice in the younger brother's return. You know, he's been the one working hard the whole time, and now that the little brother, who you know didn't bother to care to stick around or care about what happened to the land, anything like that, he went out, partied, didn't really care what he left behind, or that this older son had to really pick up his slack. I think the older son felt like the younger son probably wanted to act like all the waste and all the extravagance never happened and that he could just come back. I don't think he realized how humiliating it probably was for the younger son to come back. And it's very clear that the older son doesn't feel that the little brother deserves his father's forgiveness. So the father comes up to the older son, and he begs him to join in on the party, but the older son's mad, and he starts talking to the dad and saying that, you know, you're so quick to throw a party for this younger brother of mine, but you've never bothered to throw a party for me. I've been doing all this work for you. I've stayed faithful by your side, and you just don't really seem to care, and it's not fair. The father tries to explain to the older son that he has always been there for him. He does appreciate him and how everything that the dad owns belongs to the older son. But then again, he also tries to explain how he's feeling as a dad and his younger child because that's still his son. So the father invites the older son to feel the same way about how he's feeling and about how he's so happy about the younger son's return. The older son just doesn't want to hear it and refuses to join the party. We don't ever really know if he joined the party or not. It kind of leaves it there. But I suspect that his pain and his pride probably stopped him from being able to join in on the community and have fun with everyone else. So before we read the scripture, I wanted to bring up a couple of points. Jesus, I think, put the characters in the story for the people who were listening to put it into perspective. It's obvious that the father in the story represents God. The younger child represents us, the sinners, the people who are willing to turn away sometimes from our father and give up our inheritance and our future in heaven to enjoy the earthly pleasures. The older child represents the self-righteous, the Pharisees, and the people who thought that their way of doing things and their way of being was the only way to God. So when Jesus put these characters together, I believe that he wanted to show us that it's okay for people to make mistakes, and when they mess up, they can come back to God their Father, and he will forgive them with grace and an open heart. So also, as we're reading the scripture, I wanted you to think about whether or not any of the characters resonate within you. So let me get to the scripture here. Okay. The parable of the lost son. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare, and here I am starving to death? I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him?' 'My son,' the father said, 'you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.'" So I think a lot of us, in one way or another, can relate to the prodigal son. In listening to this story, your heart may have felt broken when the son finds himself living with the pigs, knowing that, you know, he really messed up. And what is he going to do? Like, he's in this desperation, and he's in a really bad situation. He understands the loving home that he left behind. We know that feeling of humiliation and shame, and sometimes out of fear, we don't ask for that mercy, and we end up living in a really bad situation. Our embarrassment and pride keeps us from seeking out a life of freedom and holds us hostage, and I think that's really sad. Some of us have been in the role of the father, and we've welcomed our own children back home, or another one who's left and found their way back. I'm starting to see that with my husband in this role, as he struggles with Allison leaving home soon and going out in the world to make her own mistakes. But I know that he's always going to welcome her back with open arms. So thinking of my own life, along with having moments of being the prodigal son, I know that I've also struggled with being the other son. I've made plenty of mistakes. Luckily, my loved ones and God has forgiven me for those mistakes that I've made. But there's a lot of moments when I look back where I realize I felt irritated or judgmental at the fact that, you know, I work really hard and I struggle for what I have, and others seem to do the bare minimum and enjoy things that I didn't think they necessarily deserved. Over the years, I've watched coworkers get promoted when I knew they've been lazy and put in minimal effort and loyalty to the company. I've seen people celebrate at graduations that I knew have cheated their way through some of the classes or barely contributed to group projects. I've walked into homes on my child protection investigations and seen houses three times bigger than mine, with all the best furniture, full cupboards, all the latest electronics, all the while learning that the unemployed parents earn double the amount of income that I do and receive thousands and thousands more than I do on income tax return time. And so realizing all that hard work I do and relating it to, you know, what others have, and I don't know, I just don't always understand that. It's also heartbreaking when I see people who can't conceive and have their own child, and then on the other hand, I'm placing drug-exposed baby after drug-exposed baby in foster homes and watching these other parents over here really cry, and it just seems that life is really unfair sometimes, and it's hard to make sense. It feels discouraging that people who can be so abusive and reckless can still receive so many blessings. So sometimes I really can understand why the other son in the parable responds the way that he does. I'm not saying that it's right, but really in thinking about my life, I can understand that. Because I know that when I grew up, I was taught that hard work and commitment will lead to rewards, but sometimes it doesn't always feel that way. So I think of Jesus and what he teaches me and what he teaches all of us in this parable. And then I really realize that, you know, what right do I have to judge other people? I don't know people's full story. I don't know the walk that they've walked. It's not my job to police other people and determine what people deserve and don't deserve. I have my own path to walk, and some people might look at me and look at the mistakes I've made and think I don't deserve the things I have. So that's not a good feeling. I really wouldn't want people to think of me that way. So I really don't have any right to be looking at others that way. Jesus teaches us that we all deserve our Father's love and redemption. There isn't one person who deserves it more than the other. So my work isn't more important than anyone else's work. How I find my way to God isn't harder than anyone else's. And that I need to focus on myself, be more forgiving, and give my brothers and sisters the grace that I would also like to receive. Every single person has the equal opportunity to receive God's grace. And thanks to Jesus, you don't have to be perfect, and you're not expected to be perfect. It's way too much pressure. But if you do have to be vulnerable, and you do have to be willing to humble yourself. And I think that that's a really hard part. So the father in the parable, he invited his other son to celebrate that his brother came back despite of how hard it must be for him. But I found that he also gives the son ownership, that the prodigal son is also his brother. He's not just this father's son who's come back. I think that he's also sharing that responsibility for giving grace and giving forgiveness to the older brother. Because I think that it kind of relates to all of us and how we need to give others grace, our brothers and sisters. So, the question I pose to you, and certainly don't have to answer it out loud, but just something to ponder is, would you enter into that party or not? And I really thought about it, and right now I'm at a place where I would join in, I would join the party, but I don't think I always would have. And I think that speaks to how I've grown as an individual and as a Christian. And I also wanted you to remember that Jesus invites all of us into the party. So, my biggest takeaway that I have from reading this story is that no matter what you've done or how far away from him you have strayed, our Father wants you back. He needs you back. He yearns for you and misses you. He'll accept you with open arms if you are willing to take the steps to come back home. He's patient and willing to wait forever if he has to. He's lovesick and will celebrate your return when you're ready. And that's all I have.